This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
This is Sean from the Gunblog Variety Cast. Unlike Bob, I was in the military, but that was a long time ago. Now what I need is a practical podcast from a practical guy. That's why I listen to Bob Main's Handgun World podcast on the Self Defense Radio Network.
I'm Bob Main, and I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. You are listening to the Handgun World Podcast, a practical show done by a practical guy, and that is me. This is episode number 407. Going to talk about some gear this week. Got a great guest joining me here for an interview from Gear Terra, and you'll find out all about that in just a few moments. Let me give some thanks to some of my previous guests last week, Chaz Murray, and why he carries now a Ruger LCR. Thank you again, Chaz, for coming on last week. Before that, my good friend Chuck Boylan talking about his Red Dot pistol. And speaking of Red Dot pistols, by the time this show airs, I'll be in day three of a Red Dot pistol class taught by John Payne at Suarez International here in the great gun-friendly state of Texas, in San Antonio, to be exact. And then the week before Chuck was on, I had Grant Cunningham talking about the Kimber K6S revolver. A lot of great guests I've had the last few weeks. Today is no exception for this episode. Jason Schiffner of Gear Terra is going to be my guest right now. Here we go. Joining me this episode, I got a special guest, Jason Schiffner from Gear Terra. Welcome to the Handgun World Podcast.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. I'm excited.
I am excited, too. You come highly recommended from Glenn Tate.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine, and I'm glad to be joining you here on this podcast.
Every time Glenn sends me a guest, they're real good. They get good reviews. So you got big shoes to fill here.
Well, I hope I can live up to that.
But, you know, when Glenn comes on my show, he sucks. So, actually, that's no big deal. You know, I had to get a little jab in there because I know he's listening and he's a fun guy. And, God, I love those books. I love those books. Man, those are great. Good stuff.
He's a good writer. He actually is pretty humble in person, a good-natured individual.
He's very humble in person, and we enjoyed having him in the two classes that we've taught up there in Western Washington.
Wait, did he wear his beard?
Let me think. Did he wear his beard? No, I don't think he wore his beard.
Oh, no.
No. I didn't get to see the Glenn Tate beard.
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it, though.
No, but he did a good job of holding the book over his face whenever we did pictures.
Okay.
all right, we will get on with the subject here now that we've picked on Glenn enough. So tell people a little bit about Gear Terra. What do you do? Tell people.
Yeah, Bob, I'm going to give you my background story for a second to where I got to Gear Terra. At first I started out doing, networking as a young kid, Cisco networking, and that was fun and it paid well, but this was shortly after 9/11 and I just kind of felt the call to serve. And I just said to myself, man, if I'm going to serve, I'm going to do special operations. And, you know, the Navy SEALs, they seemed a little bit Hollywood for my taste, and Army Green Berets, you know, Army just they have a reputation for being hard on their people. And so then I heard about Air Force Combat Control, and when I heard they jump out of airplanes and they scuba dive and they ride dirt bikes, man, I was sold.
Fun
so
stuff.
So I trained for that. Yeah, no, it was fun. So I did 10 years as a combat controller, a couple deployments in Iraq, a couple of deployments in Afghanistan. Combat controllers are best known as JTACs, which are Joint Terminal Attack Controllers, where the guys that control the air power and bring in the airstrikes. And I've worked with my career field is if I had to guess, it's probably one of the most decorated career fields in the Air Force at this time, just due to the war and everything the guys have done. Cool. So I had a lot of fun, but the ops tempo was crazy. I was always gone, and you just can't live a normal life, and it was time to get out. And so when I came home, I had a lot of gear, Bob, and I'll explain to you why this is the case. The Air Force has some simple math. They realize that hands are more expensive than gloves, and feet are more expensive than boots. And so it actually saves the Air Force money to not track all this extra gear and, generally speaking, reissue gear. Now, I don't have sensitive items like optics or NVGs, but I do have a lot of that field gear, and it's the top-end field gear that these special operators get issued to them. And it was occupying a lot of my garage. And at first, my wife said, well, what are you going to do with that? And I was like, what do you mean? It's my gear. what do you mean what am I going to do with that?
I got to keep that stuff.
That's my gear. And then I realized I want my garage. So I started selling on eBay, and I took it serious because that's what I do for everything. I was professional about it. I did the right kind of pictures, right kind of customer service, and it just started to work, and I was making money, and I was really surprised. And then I was telling guys about this that were retired, and they said, hey, can you sell my gear? And I was like, well, yeah, I guess. And so then I just started buying gear from guys and reselling on eBay. I got pretty good at it and started a store and hired a couple people, trained them up, and now it's GearTerror.com. We got our website. We do most of our sales via eBay, and then GearTerra, the actual .com, is a very tailored website, very specific things on there.
Yeah, I see that. I'm looking at it right now for my listeners' benefit. It's GearTerra, TERRA.com. A link will be in the show notes. That's a cool background, Jason. So I bet you really have access to some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it's I use my contacts to acquire gear, and this is gear that doesn't get sold to the general public. It is made specifically for special operators. It is the highest grade stuff. Almost everything is made in the U.S. with U.S. materials. So it's a very high grade stuff. A higher grade than what might be issued to your conventional military. And it's just exciting to be able to sell it at such a good price because, I'm buying it pre-owned, but some of it's never been used. And what's funny is you kind of have to know about this gear to find it, or you have to know about somebody like me to find it, because otherwise you wouldn't know what this stuff is called or how to find it.
Good point. Good point. Hence the need for your service then.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's start off with concealed carry. Let's start off with self-defense stuff, just what the ordinary people like me want or should have out there and what you suggest they have and things. You know, we had a chance to spend a little bit of time talking yesterday before this interview, and I kind of shot you some questions. If one of them was asking, what is it that you see people spend a lot of money on that they really don't need?
Yeah, the main thing people spend their money on that they don't need is gear they don't know how to use yet. And I have a concept called just-in-time gear. And basically what it is guys will do a lot of research, and they'll say, oh, well, there's this expert guy, and he uses this, this, and this, and there's this other expert guy, he uses this, this, and this. And they'll go and get that gear, and it might be great gear, but they don't know how to use it yet. They don't know why that expert discovered a need for that gear. And there's a reason why in basic training, they start you out with just iron sights on your rifle, that you need to learn the absolute basics, and you build from there. And so what I see I see them spending their money on gear when – more often time they should be spending their money on training to learn how to use the basic gear that they have as best as they can.
Wow. You know what? I want my listeners to know I didn't set Jason up to say that. People have heard me say that all the time. Spend more time and more money on your training and less on gear. Not that you don't need gear, but you've had some situations, I understand, where somebody had gear, didn't know how to use it, ended up being a liability, didn't they?
Yeah, there's a number of examples that I can give you. I'll give you the one that's jumping to mind, and this particular story didn't turn out to be a liability, but I just want to give you an example. Over my career, I carried less and less gear. And because I got good at what I needed to carry, and I knew what I needed to carry. Now, when I was in Iraq one time, there's what you go on these helicopter rides, and they're kind of like as you get out to your base. And I was a specialist, so basically I would get assigned to a Green Beret team. So I don't travel with my team. I'd go out as an individual to my team. And so I was getting on this ring flight to get out to my team, you're, in a sense, you're temporarily a team with whoever's on that helicopter with you. And across from me is seated this guy, and I could just almost see a little bit of fear on his face. This might have been the first time he's ever been deployed, first time he's ever been outside the wire. This guy has probably 18 magazines on his chest. He's got all sorts of armor that he doesn't need. He just does not look ready for a fight if we got him one. And the reality is, temporarily, he's my teammate. Now, he's a liability. And so he doesn't know his gear. He probably hasn't trained on it, and he's not confident. And now it's, you know, me and this guy. And so that's just one example of a guy who is relying on gear instead of experience.
Do you ever find ordinary citizens that conceal carry making similar errors in judgment like that?
Well, I can tell you with concealed carry, a couple things is, you know, only carry what you know how to use and what you're prepared to use. You know, that means some people will say, well, I'll carry a knife. Well, are you trained on a knife? Do you know how to use a knife? Now, the other thing with the thing that I see with pistols with guys is maybe they're carrying just a larger pistol than they're comfortable carrying. And so they just really don't carry. But their pride says, well, you know, I love my Kimber. You know, I got to carry my Kimber. But then you don't carry it. And or whatever it might be, or maybe and the other thing is just keeping it simple. When it comes to concealed carry, it's about having it and being prepared to use it and knowing how to use it right. So just having for example, for me, it's a Glock 19. It's simple. It's what I'm trained on. It's what I used in the military. I'm good at it. It just seemed right to carry that. And before I had a SIG that I carried. And so a Glock 19, a comfortable in-the-waistband holster, an extra magazine with a comfortable in-the-waistband holster for that, good belt, decent pair of pants, and a shirt that comfortably goes over top of all of it, and that's all you really need.
You sound like me. That's my setup. Glock 19 is my primary carry, and of course I don't have a military background like you, but I do know how to use everything that I'm carrying, and I do, and I have trained quite a bit and trained other people on how to use similar items as well. So it sounds like a great setup.
Yeah, it's basic, it's simple, it's comfortable, and ultimately, what you're trained on is what you should be carrying.
You mentioned something earlier that I've said a whole bunch of times, but I'm glad you said it this time. And that is, if somebody's not comfortable carrying something or they're not really comfortable in the use of it, they generally don't carry it. And then what good is it doing?
It doesn't do you any good, you know. And, or worse yet, guys sometimes get in a bad habit of leaving that weapon somewhere that you're just not thinking straight. You're used to the weapon. It doesn't stand out to you as being odd, but maybe you're leaving it in a place that potentially someone can get to because you're just not in the habit of really keeping that thing on your side. And so just having the right size pistol, the right – and just comfortably carrying it and making that a part of your habit structure, now you've got it. Now it's not a liability.
And even if you – what do you think about this? Even if you have to downsize a little bit, if it's something that you have – when you really need it, doesn't that make a little bit more sense?
Yeah, so the first thing is, like, if you're gonna downsize, whatever you're gonna do, if you're gonna change the weapon you carry, you got to train on it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're changing caliber size, you got to train on that. But yeah, if you're telling yourself I have a concealed carry license and I'm a guy who carries, but then if you honestly assess how often do you carry. You got to realize, wait, maybe I'm not a guy who carries because, you know, I have it with me once a week. So you're
That's
a guy that carries
carrying.
Once a week.
That's not carrying. No.
And so assess your situation. If you're only carrying once a week, why? You know, is it because it's not comfortable? Maybe you just don't want to carry. Okay. But consider downsizing. And if you do, make sure you train on it.
And not only that, but know how to maintain it, know how to buy all the right gear to keep that setup and that pistol going and things like that, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's one of the reasons I like a Glock. They're very simple. They're easy to use. They're great to train on. I like doing malfunction drills on them. They're good pistols. You know, and I'm not like get a Glock. I don't have a preference. It's just what I trained on in the military.
Right.
You know, tens of thousands of rounds. I'm just like, this is what I know. It's what I carry.
Yeah. You know, we had a chance to talk a little bit yesterday, Jason, about some of the things that that I teach with my co-instructor, Ben Branham, and I think a lot of it is similar to your pistol training as well. We teach a lot of one-handed shooting, one-handed manipulations. When you say knowing how to use something, we teach knowing how to really use it. You brought up a good point yesterday. You don't know which hand's going to get shot.
You don't get to pick which hand's going to get shot. And, you know, so during training, particularly Griffin Group was really good at this. One of the things they showed us was some examples of police officers getting in shootings. And this particular example was a female responding to two robbers inside of a house. And the engagement started inside of the garage. And it was just inside of a garage. That's not exactly a big distance. There's two of them. They're both armed. She's there. She's armed. There's maybe a car between them. And a lot of rounds were exchanged. So that's the first thing to remember. A lot of rounds are exchanged in gunfights. And it's not the movie. You're not just going to take somebody out immediately. Now, her primary shooting hand was shot, and she even dropped her pistol during the fight, but she continued the fight. She did not quit, and she continued the fight with her left hand. She succeeded, and I don't remember the exact results. I know that one of them ended up in the hospital, and I don't know either one of them maybe died on the scene or was caught later. I don't recall that part of the detail. What I do know is she won the fight.
You said her dominant hand was shot?
Yes.
Was her gun in the hand at the time or not? Do you know?
Right, and she dropped it, but she didn't give up. She recovered. Okay.
She recovered
her weapon. Yep.
She recovered it with her offhand and continued the fight. Excellent. Yes. I mean, excellent. That's the key, and people don't think about that, especially a lot of your background probably trained you to think about that stuff, but a lot of people that don't have your kind of background, I don't know if they really think that stuff through.
No, I was at the range with a friend of mine, and I won't say who, but he was pretty accurate, right? But his stance was just not great. So he's leaning back on the back, and he just doesn't have a good body stance. But generally, he would take time, maybe 5 to 10 seconds between his shots, fairly accurate. And so I said, hey, try moving and shooting. He wasn't even willing to move and shoot. He was just really happy about his tight shot group. Whereas, for me, I can keep the same shot group whether I'm moving forward or, for the most part, sitting still with my pistol. And you got to realize if real gunfights, they're serious. It's not this ideal environment. Another use case example was this police officer. He was another similar situation where two opponents and they're both armed, and he gets in a gunfight with them, and he goes dry, and you know what he did, Bob? He raised his left hand straight up in the air. Do you know why he did that?
When the pistol went dry?
Right.
He raised his hand straight up in the air?
Straight up in the air.
Why?
That's what he was taught to do at the range.
When he ran dry. Oh, God.
Right. Yeah. He didn't survive that one.
Yeah. Okay.
But he did exactly what he was taught. And the only reason they know this is because they can see this from the dash cam. And so when it comes down to a fight, you're going to do whatever you've been taught to do, whatever you've trained to do, to include basically when you run it through your mind. We all run through our mind, oh, this scenario I would do this, this scenario I would do this. And so anytime you're doing that, you're creating a neural network in your own mind, including training. And I'll just give you a really basic example. There was one time I was in Afghanistan, and this is before the fighting season. Like, we know when the fighting season is. It's not here yet. We're still just building rapport with the locals, et cetera. So no one's really, ready for a fight. Nonetheless, we're kind of walking through the village, and I go by this open gated door, and this dog starts to come at me. Now, the next split second where my mind checks in, this is the situation. I've already raised my rifle, put it on fire, and taken the slack out of my trigger. All those things happened before my conscious even stepped in to make a decision whether I was actually going to pull that trigger or not. Now, the dog backed off, so I didn't have to shoot the dog. That's good. But the point is, you're going to do whatever it is you've trained to do.
Yeah, and I don't mean to – hopefully it didn't come across a few minutes ago as me making fun of, unfortunately, somebody that lost their life because they were improperly trained and put their arm in the air when they ran dry. But I think what you just pointed out, Jason, is that those of us who teach classes, we bear a great responsibility to teach the proper techniques so somebody doesn't get themselves killed for doing something stupid.
Yeah, and I didn't perceive that you were making fun of that, and you didn't know what I was going to tell you afterward.
No.
But it is critical. The onus is on the teachers, and so, but also on the student to find that right course. You know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So if you're not, if you aren't prepared to learn what you think you can do at a higher level, you know, there's this, the sheepdog mentality says, you know, I'm going to save people, I'm going to protect people, I'm the one that people are really counting on, whether they realize it or not. Okay, that might be true, but are you really prepared? Because preparation is about skills, not necessarily the gear that you carry, because gear can be a liability. And your skills need to train to actual situations. And the best way to do that is either people that have been in them or people. The other thing is, you know, study them. I was thinking about this the other day. I watched the movie Sully. Did you watch that movie, Bob?
I did see Sully. Yeah, great movie.
You know what prepared him? Not only all his years of experience, but he studied what people did when something would happen with their aircraft. Now, what happened to his aircraft in flight? No precedence whatsoever. He set the precedence, and he made a decision to land in the river, and it saved all those lives. And so because he had studied, he was prepared. He had already made decisions before it was time to make a decision. And the same thing happens if you say to yourself, I'm the sheepdog, I'm the one who's going to protect people, I'm the one who's caring. You need to know and have in your mind what you're going to do, but look back at previous examples and historic examples and see how those things worked out.
Yeah, and Jason, earlier you mentioned that there are people that buy stuff that they don't know how to use properly. Can you think of some examples of that you've seen?
Well, I would say the biggest thing, you know, stepping away, you know, maybe talking about ARs a little bit here, but where guys tend to have a lot more accessories than they need. They're
9-pound AR rifles, right?
Yeah, and so I've seen that, and I can even talk to myself, you know, about my own experience over time where my rifle had fewer and fewer things as I went. Now, when I was in Afghanistan, you know, I had a grenade launcher on it because I was a part of being a JTAC. You know, I had smoke rounds and, of course, explosive rounds. But I did run a little heavy, but I wasn't, you know, I'm not number one a shooter. But what I see guys doing is just, I don't know what it is. I think it's this YouTube phenomenon. They see someone on YouTube and makes a really good use case for why they should have that piece of gear. And that's fine. But again, I want guys to remember just-in-time gear. Even though it looks good, even though it's fun, and you know, I've thought about this, Bob. What makes gear so awesome? It's like a personal upgrade. I love getting new gear. I love getting stuff in the mail. I'm super excited, and when it shows up and opening it, like, it's an experience.
It's
like
Christmas all the time.
Oh, man, I love it. And, you know, even though I'm shipping stuff out all the time, I actually get part of that joy because, you know, yeah. The guys get such good deals from me. It's such high-quality gear, and I try to package it up just right, and I'm thinking, man, this guy's, you know, he's going to be so excited about this.
He
got a great deal.
He's going to love it, right?
He's going to love it. I'm excited for him. And gear's fun to get. So we can all agree on that.
We can agree on that, yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, buy gear for fun. There is some of that going on. But know how to use it. That's the biggest thing. Because when it comes down to it, and you are going to have to decide what to do in these situations, you know, be prepared. Because you're going to do whatever it is you've already prepared to do. Whatever you practice, whatever you have mentally got rehearsed, that's what you're going to do in that moment. Because you're not operating in your conscious mind anymore. It's a different place that your brain is using.
And so you flip this stuff. You find it and you flip it.
Yeah, you know, I know the guys as they get out. I've been out for about 3 years now, and so what I'll do is basically I use existing contacts to get a hold of others. But basically, and it works because, you know, if it was someone other than a special operator calling them up, you know, at least a prior operator, they'd be like, who are you and why are you calling me and how do you know what it is I used to do? But seeing as, you know, I'm from that community, it's a brotherhood, so I can make those phone calls and it's not awkward, and usually I have a referral. And generally speaking, the longer they've been out, the more happy they are that I'm calling them because yeah. They've realized it's the same. You know, it's really hard to hang up that beret when you're done because it's so much of your identity that you did it's hard. Yeah. But it's important. It needs to be done. It's part of the transition. You figure out who you are outside of that uniform. Now, for guys, that gear is – I mean they drug it all over Iraq and all over Afghanistan or wherever else they got deployed. And so it's very close to them. And even me, I did this, I've been doing this for about 3 years now. And there were certain pieces of gear that I just sort of clung to. And then just over time, I'm like, I don't need it. Besides, I'm just going to get more, you know. And it was kind of silly that I was hanging on to some gear, even though I sell it professionally.
So, you know, there are two types. I shouldn't say only two, but there are, I do have distinctly two types of listeners that generally listen to my podcast. I have a lot of new shooters, new concealed carriers, people that have never done this before. And then I get a lot of emails and sometimes voicemails from people who are very experienced. Maybe they have a background like yours, or maybe they come from law enforcement. Let's talk to the first group first. Let's talk to the people. What kind of gear? You mentioned, you touched on it earlier, but somebody who's just getting started in this and they come and they say, Jason, what do I need?
I mean, if they didn't have any set of opinions or you know, determination to do one thing or another, I would just tell them to get a Glock 19 because it's just a really great pistol in a lot of ways. Again, I'm not saying it's you know, if you got a favorite, go with your favorite, okay?
Go
but I'm talking
favorite,
to this
yeah.
brand new guy who basically doesn't have a lot of opinions yet. So just go with that Glock 19. It's a standard. Some other things, you know, it holds its value if you wanted to resell it. The accessories are so common for these things in terms of just mags, you know, getting mags all over the place. But yeah, just a basic Glock 19. The only thing I ever did to upgrade my Glock 19 was to get the tritium sights on it. I preferred those. But other than that, that is it. Glock 19 with tritium sights. And any gun store you go to will know what you're asking for when you say that. And, you know, I'd carry an extra mag. And then I spent the write-up – you know, I spent enough money to get my comfortable in the waistband holsters. I don't sell them at my store, so I had to go somewhere else and get them. But I wanted to get the right kind. I couldn't even tell you what they were at this point, but do your research there. Get yourself a comfortable belt. Make sure your pants are at least probably one size big, you know, than your actual waist. And, you know, get a nice shirt that's going to – not show off that you're carrying.
You know, it's funny. You and just about everybody else says, well, make sure you buy a pair of pants that are at least one size big. The other way to look at that is make your body 15 pounds less. if you have it to lose.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not a judge. Everybody's in a different place in life. I lost a lot of weight when I got out of the military, but it was mostly muscle. So I actually lost some pant size getting out too. But everybody's at every different place. Yeah, lose some weight, that's an option. Or just get slightly bigger pants, that's an option.
It's actually a little cheaper to just lose the weight and healthier than buying bigger pants.
It's definitely healthier, and it most likely is cheaper too. But you know, there is, you know, Bob, it's easier to conceal when you're a bigger guy.
Well, now that's true. It's easier to conceal certain ways when you're a bigger guy. Some I shouldn't say guy because we have a lot of obviously women concealed carriers too, but it depends on how you carry. For some people that like to appendix carry, it can be a challenge sometimes.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
So, all right, let's the final thing I want to talk about when it comes to concealed carry, or, you know, just the more of the defensive mindset. I want to get back to what you were talking about earlier when you said you're gonna do what you were trained to do, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Teach it, talk about it all the time. Do you have any other examples of that? Because you've been around, and you've seen some things.
Let me give you another example, and this one again was from Griffin Group. It was really good for this type of training, and they have what's called the House of Pain, and you know, they're training with actual paintball rounds, but these aren't any regular paintball rounds. They're running about three times the normal speed, and they store them in a freezer, you know. So
Ooh.
The good news is you didn't have any marks from the paint, but your skin's going to be pretty welted when you're done.
Yeah.
Now, what they would do is this House of Pain just had a line of doors, probably 18 doors. Every wall was just a series of doors, and it's just a square building. And there was about, I'd say, 10 to 15 of us students in the middle, and we're seated with our backs to whichever door, and we're just facing inward towards each other at these tables. And we know what's going to happen. There's going to be one instructor and assailant, and he's going to come in, and he's just going to start laying waste to everyone he can possibly lay waste to. Now, in the four corners of the room are your cover and concealment in this case. And Bob will just cover concealment. Cover will stop around concealment is something they can't see through. So concealment might be like a sheet or a blanket you're behind, right? A curtain. An example of cover that doesn't have concealment would be bulletproof glass. So cover and concealment is something where someone can't see you and the rounds can't get through. So in the corner is our cover and concealment. And we were even told ahead of time what to do. We were told if – because only one guy out of our group had a weapon, had a pistol to respond with. And this was a paintball pistol as well. And he was told, get your cover first and respond. But the hero that he is – and this was actually our fastest draw guy. Like, be honest, this guy was pretty dang good. I'd put him up against just about anyone. And okay. Nonetheless, he decided he was going to be the hero. So the first time the assailant comes in, what do we all do? I mean, we scatter. We want cover. Ooh, that thing's painful. Yes. Yeah, boom. And guess what? He stands up and starts to draw. And before he can get that thing out, he's taken 3 to 4 rounds to the chest, right? And why is that? Because the human eye is amazing. It's gonna notice immediately what doesn't match everything else. And in this case, it's the one body that's not moving. And then then he looks at that one body, and what's that one body doing? Starting to draw. So that's – and he's already got his rifle up.
So what's the lesson in that? What's the lesson for
people in that? The lesson is this. The first thing you do is you move.
Yes.
You grab cover and concealment, assess the situation, draw while you're still behind cover, then respond. And so we did that every other round, and we'd win every other round when we did it like that.
And I teach that extensively. And, you know, it's also – it's much harder for your opponent to hit a moving target. I mean, I've shot at a lot of moving targets, especially with a handgun. They're hard to hit.
They are hard to hit. You know, especially if you're not used to leading targets, and even trained shooters, they're not as accustomed to leading targets. Most targets we shoot at are sitting still. Shooting leading targets, leading a target. You know, if you're a hunter, that's part of what you do, but it's still a little bit of a different skill set. But learning how to lead your targets is definitely its own skill set, and. I'd say a lot of people are not as accustomed to that, mainly because our ranges aren't set up for it.
I shoot competition matches a fair bunch, and people always struggle with the moving target stages where they have to shoot something that's either swinging or moving or sliding or dropping or stuff like that. It's not easy to do.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? That's only a fraction closer to what a real fight is like.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, because in a real fight, you're both moving.
Everybody's moving. Everything's moving. Stuff's noisy. It's just – it's confusing.
You've obviously got some experience in that.
Yeah, not too much experience. A few things that I've done. For me, it was definitely a humbling career just because a lot of the guys that I worked with, I mean, some of them did some just insane things. So I think in relative terms, I think relative to the guys that also went through my same career field, pretty light stuff that I went through, relative to someone that's never been to warfare, maybe it would be considered heavy. So in my eyes, nothing too significant. Let me put it this way. I was never in a situation where I was like, wow, this really could be it. Most of the time I felt like things were under control.
Oh, that's good. Well, and thanks for all the service that you gave us, too. We really appreciate that kind of stuff.
Oh, thanks.
You guys are – you're a special group of people, and we appreciate it a lot. So let's shift gears here. Let's talk – we just got done talking about some self-defense stuff. Now let's talk about the opposite side of it. Maybe like we could call it the operator gear.
Operator gear. Yeah, I have a lot of operator gear.
Yeah, well, talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, so operator gear, the first thing I want to talk about is the gear that's absolutely closest to your body, that's your own clothes. This is one of the most neglected things, I would say. And then I'll give you the first example, right? So Glenn was in my store the other day, and I have a box labeled Gore-Tex. He's like, oh, Gore-Tex. I could use some Gore-Tex pants. And a lot of guys don't even think about that. And, what are you going to do? You're going to wear jeans, in your tactical situation. They might look okay on the street, but in terms of your tactical application, they're not that great. So what are your clothes? What are you wearing? What kind of socks do you have? I'll tell you by now, I'm spoiled with socks. I could spend a podcast on socks. And I'll tell you by now, I'll just say I only get Darn Tough socks or Smart Wool socks, and I'm very particular. I don't sell those because when I get them from the guys, they're used. So I'm not going to sell used socks. Yeah. The only thing I'm selling on my eBay store is some wool socks that are military, and guys do like those as well.
Why do you choose those types of socks?
They just work, in terms of being on my feet for a long period of time, wearing boots, going long distances, maybe, you're going to go a day or two or longer without changing your socks. They just work. I don't get blisters like I did when I was in training, when I, would use those. I don't even know what socks I was using in training. But smart wool socks, darn tough socks. They're just shaped right. They help keep the arch on your feet. And they're not cheap, $30 for a pair of socks. That seems like a lot of money, and it is, but you'll get spoiled pretty quick.
I'm sure. And these are types of things that we don't think about, especially, those of us that are just, ordinary people going out there on an ordinary day.
So another piece of clothing that I would highly recommend is getting your soft shell exterior. Now, there's two basic types of soft shell exteriors, and one is basically going to have a fleece liner typically, and one is just going to be a shell. And so for a lot of guys, I would say at least get yourself a set of soft shell, a top and a bottom, and it doesn't have to be lined. I would almost recommend getting one that's not lined. Because it just gives you a ton of options. It's going to keep you dry when you need to stay dry. They're breathable. And I'll give you like a super tip right now for your audience. So there is what's called the Protective Combat Uniform, PCU. And it was designed by Mountaineers. And it was made for U.S. Special Operators. And this is some of the absolute highest quality stuff. And you can find this, for example, on eBay stores like mine or others. Sometimes I have them, sometimes I don't. I have a few on my website, but it's a very limited selection. So I wouldn't have enough for everyone anyway. But this is just – you can get killer deals on these for what you're getting in terms of value. And typically they're just going to be like they're called Alpha Green, but it's like a gray, or it's a Coyote Brown. And they'll have on your arms, they'll have a place where you could put a patch. Now, I've had some guys say, I don't want to look too tactical. And I want to talk about that for a second. I was at Disneyland the other month or so, and camo is actually – it's popular. I saw a lot of people just wearing camo.
Yeah.
Ladies have the yoga pants they like to wear, yoga pants and camo. And the other thing with tactical bags, that was common too. So I saw a lot of people wearing bags that were tactical with Molly. I don't even know if they know it. You can do with Molly, but it just is – it's in.
They probably don't know what you can do with it.
I don't think they do, and that's all right. I wish I could sell them some pouches because I have some pretty cool pouches, but yeah. They don't know. But I think it happened after every single war. Given enough time, just whatever it is the GIs were using eventually just became kind of popular in the mainstream culture, and I see that happening now.
Yeah, good. That's a real good tip. So – what else is it about I guess I shouldn't have called it operator gear because we're not all operators out there. Most of us usually aren't. But what else is it that's kind of cool that you've been selling lately?
Well, first of all, it's fine to call it operator gear, and it's good to be humble, but part of the mentality is you ask yourself, what do the guys who have the absolute most challenging job use? And this is good logic because, hey, if it works for them, it's going to work for me. I'm not doing anything at that level. So it's good for them. It's probably good for me. Now, that holds up most of the time. Now, other gear – a lot of the stuff that we end up selling, they're bags, a lot of gloves, a lot of apparel items like I just described, your soft shell top and bottom. Because my guys are they're all scuba qualified and free fall parachutists and climbers. So I have scuba gear. I have you name it. I have climbing gear. I have a lot of stuff, but it's very select. We list maybe five items a day because it's eBay and it's very specialized items. So even as I'm telling you this, don't just go to my store, but go to my store to get a sense of what we have. But there are other sellers that also do the same thing that I do. Yeah, they buy from the Navy SEALs or those types of units, and they're putting it on eBay. So I'm not the only one with this gear, but once you find out what the names for these things are, it's like gold. It's like keyword gold, because if you don't know the keyword, it's really hard to find things on eBay.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, true. Oh,
you only find what you're looking for. So if you don't know what it's called, you're not going to find it.
So you'll show them what it's called.
Yeah, you go to my store, you kind of look at some of these names, you know, hit us up with messages too. My phone number is even on the on our website, just right there at the top. You can call us, and we'll kind of direct you from there. But really, you know, we're about number four in terms of sales in our niche as far as guys who buy from prior special operators and resell on eBay.
Nice.
So some other stores are Legit Kit, Orbital Tactical, Zone 5 Tactical. They all have very good reputations and sell the same type of gear.
You're in Tacoma, right?
We are. We're up in Tacoma. If you are in the area, we are near the Emerald Queen Casino exit. We do invite people to stop by. Just give us a ring if you're planning on coming over. We don't like leave our items out on display. We're not really set up for browsing. So if you come on over, we don't mind having you over. Just let us know you're coming.
Yeah, that's great. I'm paying you a visit next time I'm up in your area.
Oh, good.
But as if you talk to Glenn or anybody else, I like to try to go up there in June, July, or August.
Yeah, come on up. June, July, or August is amazing weather up here in the Northwest. Of course, we're known for our rain. It actually rains more in New York than it does here. We're just very overcast. But if you come during that type of season, it's just absolutely stunning. You'll get to see the mountain. I know Glenn and his guys like to come over to my store. It's fun. I try to keep some sodas on hand and make it a nice place to hang out.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, I've asked all the questions I wanted to ask. I like to always give my guests the last word to basically say whatever they want before we sign off in a few minutes. So go.
Yeah, well, Bob, just thanks for having me on. You know, this is a blast for me. It's new for me. Again, when you look at my store, the goal is that you get a sense of these keywords. So I'm not the only seller, and I'm not going to be able to supply everything that everybody needs. So just get on there, get a sense of what you're looking for. And remember this, just-in-time gear. Again, gear is fun to buy. It's a personal upgrade. But don't buy gear unless you have in your mind the actual purpose that gear needs to fulfill. I would suggest instead you should be spending your money on training.
That's a terrific point, just-in-time gear. I mean, yeah, unless you've got a specific purpose, you're just buying stuff.
Yeah,
spending money.
If you get into a problem where you have way too much stuff, call me. I buy gear.
That's great. Jason, thanks very much. I really appreciate your time. It's been wonderful. You know, you donated your time, and I hope you get some great benefit from it too.
Okay, Bob. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Hello. I'm Rob Morse from the Polite Society Podcast. I took a Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced class. I wish every concealed carrier took a class like this one. The class covered both basic shooting skills and advanced topics. Skills like shooting from unusual positions, shooting with one hand while moving, and shooting when in contact with the target. Those are the real skills you want if you were ever forced to use your firearm. I was impressed because I'm not the perfect student. No, far from it. I took the class because I needed competent instructors to teach me and correct my many mistakes. They did that with professional skill. I plan to train with them again.
Well, many thanks to Jason. I appreciate you donating your time, Jason. Thank you very much. That was a lot of good information that you shared with us. Quite insightful. A lot of that's quite insightful. Don't forget his website, GearTerra.com. That'll be in the show notes. There'll be a direct link to it, GearTerra.com. I love the fact that he puts his phone number on the website so you can call in, and it's an easy phone number to find right there on the website. That is good stuff. And I really appreciate the people that come on this show, donate their time, share with us good information. I really feel that, you know, if a guest comes on and he or she gives out just two or three good pearls of wisdom and ideas, then it really turns out to be a worthwhile event for you to listen to. And check it out if you want to get some of Jason's cool gear at GearTerra.com. Maybe you might even have some gear that you want to sell. Let Jason sell it for you. All right, now, let me ask you a question. Each and every week, when you listen to the Handgun World podcast, and I appreciate you very much,
Does this podcast help you? Does it help you in any way to make your decisions about self-defense and about concealed carry and things like that? If it does, would you do me some favors? First of all, I would love it if you'd give me an iTunes review. I got a lot of them. Those of you who do use iTunes or Stitcher Radio or any of the podcast programs, most of them have ways that you can put out a review. I would love for you to write a review. Secondly, if you would like to support the show, you know, I only have one sponsor, one paid sponsor, and that is Concealment Solutions. Great holster maker, concealmentsolutions.com. Check them out. 10% off is your discount if you use the coupon code HandgunWorld, HandgunWorld for 10% off. But that's it. That's the only brief commercial that I'm not running on my shows. And there, I just did it for about like 20 seconds. Otherwise, this is a listener-supported show. Therefore, if you want to learn some more, get some good reinforcement on some good self-defense techniques, Ben Branham and I have an excellent video program called The Shooters Club. We got a lot of members on The Shooters Club, a lot of good feedback coming to us. It's only $8 per month. That's it. We have over 65 good quality videos. They don't replace training, but they tell you a lot of what you can dry fire practice, and they can give you a lot of good ideas on what it is that you might want to focus on and practice. Or you can save money and sign up for a whole year for $75, and then we'll send you the password, and you can get started on that. If you buy things on Amazon, I just bought two products off of Amazon earlier, and I bought them from myself on my store. If you don't mind, if you're doing Amazon shopping, go through the Handgun World Amazon store. Just go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store page, and follow that link. Use that link when you make your Amazon purchases. I'm an affiliate. It'll help me out. Amazon will, every month, send me a little bit of money for all the sales that go through that site. Finally, Ben Branham and I might be traveling to an area near you or maybe even into your town or your part of the country to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. Our entire 2017 schedule is at handgunworld.com. Check it out, handgunworld.com. The schedule is right there. We might be adding one or two more classes this year, including getting Paul Carlson from Ohio to come down to Texas to teach a class. Ben and I are going to Ohio to teach with him up there, and then we might be getting Paul to come down here to San Antonio to put on a class. So there you go. Check it all out. Those are ways that you can support me. And, you know, last but not least, this is not financial support, but I sure love getting voicemails. The telephone number is 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727, and you could be on the Handgun World podcast with your question, your comment, and of course, I will respond. For this episode, that's pretty much it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again for tuning in another week. You guys do it regularly, and I really appreciate you as listeners. It means a lot. Until next week, please remember to read your Bible every day. Also remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. And finally, shoot straight and shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.